Hi, this is Lily Benoit.
And this is Louisa.
And we are once again joined by our special guests, Megan and Aiden.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Hey!
And you're listening to Born or Made. And today, I feel like we have a super interesting case to talk about.
We're talking about Eileen Wuornos.
Eileen is the first female serial killer that we've talked about on this podcast, which isn't surprising considering that female serial killers make up less than 7% of all serial killers, which is a pretty staggering statistic, if you ask me. So, some quick facts about Eileen's early life.
She was born in 1956. And her father committed suicide in prison for child molestation.
There is a little bit of discrepancy about how her father died. Some sources say it was suicide. Some say he was murdered. But it is clear that he died in prison while Eileen was very young.
She was four. Her mother abandoned her and her brother, and they went to go live with their grandparents. But her grandmother was an alcoholic, and her grandfather was really violent. And Wuornos claimed that he sexually assaulted her throughout her childhood. And then she also said, or she claimed, that she had sexual relations with her brother.
So, I mean, like, right away, some serious trauma to unpack about her early life. And if we think, like, she was four when her mother abandoned her to her grandparents, so she grew up in that household with the alcoholic grandparents and the grandfather sexually assaulting her, and so you can only imagine like the toll that would take on someone. She did become pregnant in her early teens. One source that I read said that the father was one of her grandfather's friends who he let him sexually assault Eileen. So the baby was given up for adoption. And several times over her, her childhood and into her teenage years, she was, like, kicked out of the house. She, would often, like, just live in the woods. And so really she became, like, a transient, just moving around from place to place. And she became a prostitute to sustain herself, so she had money for food. She would just, like, hitchhike from one place to another she did that for, a good chunk of time, but she finally settled down in Florida.
And then she also served time for several different crimes, including grand theft auto, armed robbery, and check forgery throughout the time period where she was kind of, like, hitchhiking around.
Yeah. And something that was, like, kind of interesting was that she did actually end up getting married to a rich yachtman, but he quickly annulled the marriage when she was under investigation and serving time for another crime. There's also a report that he was old, he was like 65, that she hit him over the head with his own cane. So there was maybe some domestic assault on her part. So it makes sense that was a short marriage.
So her basic MO was pretty much she would be picked up by truck drivers, so mostly men. And she was a prostitute, and when she was in the car, she would shoot them with a .22 automatic revolver, and she would sometimes undress them after they're dead. And usually these men were, like, white males between the ages of 40 and 65. So even if you look at the photos, they kind of resemble her grandfather, who was not a great person.
Yeah, I think it is absolutely shocking how much her grandfather looks like pretty much every single one of the men that she killed, in particular the Mallory, the first one that she killed.
Yeah. And I think that probably contributes to her character. And so when she would be looking for these truck drivers, you have to think back then a lot of the truck drivers were really young. So she would have to wait a significantly long time before she found a man that was a part of her kind of MO, a part of her her methodology. So that's really interesting. And obviously we look at it now and we're like, well, of course she would pick these men that look like her grandfather, but back then it was a completely revolutionary thought that that would be the type of man that she would go after.
Yeah.
Plus, like, the first victim was in prison for sexual assault. So I don't know, like, if she knew that at the time, but it just kind of, it's one of those cases where we didn't realize it until after it was over, but it, like,
yeah,
it's almost uncanny.
So, I mean, she did claim, when she was first apprehended that, these six men that she had killed, seventh, if we're gonna include Peter Seams, which, she admitted to killing, but a body was never found, so she was never convicted on his murder, but, she had claimed that all of them had tried to sexually assault her. And later on, she revoked her statement saying that, that she was killing them in cold blood and she knew exactly what she was doing. In the fact that Mallory had been previously in prison for sexual assault, it hadn't been released in court at the time. But I do think that there's a really strong possibility that he did try to sexually assault her. And what with him looking so much like her grandfather, it probably brought back some pretty traumatic memories. And I do think that could have been what sparked her killing spree.
Yeah, I think that first one probably for her was the one that set it off. So I think, like, going into it, obviously she knew that she was going to kill this man, but I would assume that she at least probably was a little bit apprehensive about it. And once, you know, I always tend to say, like, believe the victims, no matter how much of a bad person they might be or what they are doing. I do really think that he tried to assault her. And then she just probably got sent back to her childhood and just mm-hmm. did what she had to do to survive. And then she felt it and she knew what it felt like to have that power for the first time in her life and to kill that person. And then she continued to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to mention the overkill on each of the victims. They were shot multiple times, far beyond when they were dead. So that just goes again to show, like, how much rage that she has in her, and how much, I guess, killing these men is kind of like a release and a way for her to finally be in control of something.
Yeah.
And did she kill the men, like, in the truck? I mean, because just she saw men who looked like her grandfather out, but even being in close proximity with somebody who looked like her grandfather, I mean, I feel like that would enhance her rage. I mean, she was seeking them out, but I feel like she was seeking them out to have those conditions.
Yeah.
So she could, like, I don't know, justify it.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where particularly she killed these men, because she moved their bodies and she hid them in the woods. So I didn't look too deep into, like, where, like, they were when she committed the murders.
What I'm curious about is, like, how long was it between each kill? Because if these people, resemble her grandfather so much, that means that this must have been, like, somewhat organized.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She probably got into trucks with multiple people that she didn't kill mm-hmm. and, like, kind mm-hmm. of tracked the people that she knew that she wanted to kill based off of their looks.
Absolutely, yeah. So, The range of murders is, it's a pretty small window. It is kind of hard for the forensics team to get an exact date on
right.
death, because a lot of the bodies were, like, severely decomposed when they found them. But her first murder was Richard Mallory January of 89. And she had killed all the way up through into September of 1990. So it is really it's a pretty tight window. I mean, there were two murders committed in the month of May. So I really do think it was a matter of opportunity if these men were there, and if they fitted, like, her profile and what she was looking for someone to kill, then she would take the opportunity.
So what was, like, the time period of her killings? Because you said that she was, like, the first woman to fit the FBI profile.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of curious on, like, how long it took for them to realize, like, oh, this profile's kind of built for more, like, male people. And, like, I feel like it would have taken a lot longer for them to realize that, like, this perpetrator was a woman.
Probably the fact that there wasn't, I mean, there was, but it was just sort of a means to an end, but a sexual component. Because mostly when you have male serial killers, there's some sort of sexual motivation or gratification for these killings. So like with David Berkowitz, Son of Sam, he masturbated at the scenes of his crimes after he committed them. So that was what, you know, set him off and what made him feel that gratification for committing these crimes. But I think for her, it was just... she needed to do it because that's what she felt she needed to do. Yeah. So I think what set the female serial killers apart from the male serial killers for the FBI is the fact that there was that lack of sexual motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how they actually found her was after she would kill these men, she would steal belongings that they had on them because she was, all this time, she was transient, she was very poor, so she would take these items, some of them of decent value, and she would go to pawn shops and she would sell them, and that's how the police found her, is they found these items that belonged to the victim at pawn shops, and they connected it back to her. So I mean, her motivation wasn't the robbery, it was more of just a something else that she could do and she could use these men for.
So, we have a quote from Muertos after she was arrested. She said that she'd robbed them and that she'd killed them as cold as ice, and I would do it again. I know I would kill another person because I've hated humans for a long time. So that kind of counteracts her first claim that she was acting in self-defense.
Yep. So I feel like we've seen this again and again, is these killers get apprehended and they have one story, but the longer that they're incarcerated for, their story changes into perhaps more of what it really is.
And then when she was in prison, she became really unhinged, as you can see with her final words before she was lethally injected.
And it honestly, it just, I'll read you the quote of what she said, and then we'll kind of discuss it and unpack it, because there's a lot to unpack in it. So her final words were, "I'd just like to say I'm sailing with the rock, and I'll be back like Independence Day. Jesus, June 6th. Like the movie, big mothership and all, I'll be back."
So what does that mean?
So,
well, Independence Day, the movie, is about the end of the world. It's about doomsday.
Okay.
And so I think that it's super hard to try to read into this, because to me it sounds like a very mentally unhinged woman who isn't completely there.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to talk about. And I mean, in the years leading up to her lethal injection, there was countless people who were coming up and saying that you need to reevaluate her case. She's not fit to stand for the death sentence. She's not mentally stable. And there were psychiatrists who kept overruling it. And I mean, once again, I'm not firsthand on the case, I can't say how she was, but all I can say is that those last words, they aren't words of someone who, in my opinion, would be fit to stand for the death sentence.
It almost sounds like she doesn't really know what's going on. Like, she knows that she's going somewhere, but like, I think it is weird to put somebody on death sentence who is unaware that they're on death sentence.
Yeah.
Like, she thinks she's coming back.
Yeah. And maybe it is not good for us to read too into it. Maybe she is meaning to just freak people out when she says this. Maybe she's completely aware of what she's saying and how strange it sounded. But I mean, it's, to me, it's not said by someone who was in a healthy state of mind.
Yeah. You also have to think is that I'm assuming here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, she was the first woman serial killer to be killed by lethal injection, to be killed by the state.
And the second woman.
And the second woman, like, ever.
Yeah.
So the amount of press and media that was on this case was outstanding. And the fact that she was on death row for a decade. She was on death row for 10 years before they finally killed her in 2002. Mm-hmm. And so you have to think that all that time that she's spending on death row and she's sitting there in a prison cell has got to really take a toll. Mm-hmm. Because, like, she knows, like, that she's on death row. She knows that she's going to get killed. It's a matter of when. And I think probably for the people who were like, you can't kill her, like, you need to reevaluate her case. I think that there was a mental aspect in that, but she was a woman. And so people probably were really like, especially in the 90s, people were like, oh, you can't kill a woman, like, to the state. Because you see her as, like, this like, fragile human being and like this. But also, like, her just saying, I killed them in cold blood and I'll kill them again. Like, whoa.
That must have been, like, a shock to the public.
Must have been. It must have been, like, okay, she really meant what she meant. She would do it again. And so I think it probably was also super hard for the prosecutor, too, because here's this guy or this woman, probably a guy in the 90s, and being persecuted probably by the media, like, oh, you're gonna put this woman in lethal injection. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, she was a serial killer. She murdered or was convicted for 6 people, but she admitted to murdering 7 and pretty overkill in cold blood.
Yeah.
And now that you say that, honestly, given the amount of time that she was on death row, she probably had time to think about she's gonna say what's gonna happen. Yeah. So maybe her last words do have some sort of relevance, not literally, but when she says she's gonna be back,
figuratively,
there was so much press on this case that people are gonna be talking about it later, like right now, like what we're doing right now.
Yeah. And I think it is another interesting fact based on, like, what we're talking about, how publicized it was, is within 2 weeks after her arrest, she and her attorney had sold movie rights to her story.
Yeah, Charlize Theron in the movie Monster.
Yeah. And, I mean, so did the investigators in her case. They had all released rights, so that movies and books we made out of it. And I thought that was interesting, but also, like, it happened so quickly after.
Yeah. And I think her final words, so, like, Independence Day with Jesus, right? She probably turned to religion to kind of to help her and sort of provide a catharsis for her to figure out what her life was like. Her saying, you know, all, like the movie with the big mothership, because the big mothership is what, like, the aliens come on and they arrive, and she said, I'll be back. So she's like, I'm going to come back, and it's going to be in this big way. And so I don't think she meant that literally. I think she meant that she knew that she was going to live on forever as this first female serial killer to be killed by lethal injection, first female serial killer to provide a profile for the FBI. So I think she was fully aware that her case was extremely publicized and that people knew who she was. And I think she knew that people were scared of her, and that idea probably excited her because she was full-blown sociopath. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that she wanted this fame? Because I've heard stories of people who do commit crimes and become serial killers as a way that people pursue, like, becoming actors just to be famous, you know?
I mean, like she sold, like, the movie rights. So, I mean, I feel like then she did want that level of fame. And I don't know, maybe she needed money for an attorney. I don't know.
I think, like, she probably, I think at first she was killing these men to make herself feel better. And then I think when she got arrested, when she saw what was happening of her trial, and I'm in no capability to speak of her thought process, but I think probably she was going to make the best of her situation, and she was going to capitalize off of this as best as she could, because you got to think that she was poor for her entire life. So the fact that these acts bring her fame, money, publicity, and kind of, like,
fans.
People were like, you know, woman, you know, as a serial killer, people were like, whoa, okay. You know, it was a lot for people to process back then. So I think she made the best out of her situation, and she knew. She was like, okay, we're going to do this now. This is what's going to happen. So I think that's really not cool. I can't find the right terminology for that, but I think she
it was not heard of.
Yeah, it wasn't heard of at the time.
So people, I don't know, cuz although we don't see it, there's probably a bunch of people that resonate with her, especially that yeah. she's a woman. She's like at that time the first of that kind.
Yeah.
So that kind of gained a lot of traction, which is again why there's press, you know.
Yeah. And then if you look at her past and her history of sexual assault, I'm sure that probably maybe have brought comfort to some other people who had also been victims of sexual assault. Maybe it made them feel like more empowered and more able to overcome what had happened to them.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not an appropriate way to react to go on a murdering spree, but I feel like Eileen, she didn't have many options in her life. She didn't have many choices given to her. She was kind of forced into the life that she was. So I feel like killing these people was a choice for her, and one that she got to make, and she alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we think, yeah, she was, like, made by her experiences.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to, how long was she, so she was on death row for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did she have to, like, serve a certain amount of time before they, like, do you have to, like, serve time in prison, and then is that as part of your sentence, and then you're
killed? It's mostly just the long process it takes okay. to finally...
Yeah, because the governor has to sign off, mm-hmm. and then you have... They broadcast it. They mm-hmm. they broadcast it. You have people that come, and they watch it happen. The death penalty is a huge... spectacle.
Right. I just didn't know if she like when the exact date when she was gonna be killed is set, but she was on death row for 10 yeah. years.
I mean, so, there were so many like yeah. reappeals to her case right. that yeah. it did
so she it just she took a long time.
She appealed it again.
People other people reappealed other, it on right, her okay. behalf, and she always sent them away. I mean, towards yeah. the end she just wanted it to be done and over with.
I mean, yeah, because I mean I can believe that she was fully logically saying this just to free people out. But, I mean, imagine sitting on death row for 10 years. I mean, you know what you've done and that you, like, are going to die, but you know you're going to die for 10 years. That would drive, like, I can imagine that would also drive Jeremy somebody
Frank.
Crazy. Yeah. yeah. Like, just knowing that you're gonna.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this case has been a lot to unpack, but I think it is one of the most... in-depth ones that we've done. It has so many moving parts, and honestly I feel like this one for me I guess say it fit together very nicely. Like, it made sense to me why she did what she did. It wasn't a 3,000 year old demon. It wasn't
yeah
it there was a simple cause and effect for me, so I guess that was kind of nice to see that. Well, thank you again, guys, for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
It's had a good time. So I guess we will see you soon for another episode of Born or Made.
Bye.